I'm Brandon.
And I'm Brandon.
And welcome back to Apollo City Comics, your anything and everything comic book podcast. Dude, we have not done comics on the show in a while. And it's just been a back-to-back. Like, it's been crazy with all these Kickstarters that are going out right now, you know? And it's fun promoting these creators, and it's great being able to get indie creators out there and comics made. Like, if we cover comics all the time, comics are already fucking made. We're trying to get comics made on the show, and as you're listening and supporting, you're making comics because you should be backing these Kickstarters we're always ranting and raving about and whatnot, because it's a brutal industry. Comics are hard, and you know what, just like this amazing shirt says, comics will break your heart, kid. They'll break your stupid heart. And I mean, I'm super excited for the guests that we have on today, but first, don't forget, we have a Kickstarter that's kind of not live yet, but it is in the early breeding stages right now. It's cooking, you know, it's mm-hmm. it's simmering. It's developing some feet, maybe some other muscles come after, like, you know, maybe there's definitely a heartbeat. It's been a heartbeat for a bit, you know, maybe there's some lungs and some brains going on. I'm sure there's more developed at the baby at a month before it's about to be born, but you know, it's there. And you could hit the link below and just hit notify me on launch, and that's the best way to support our Kickstarter right now. We have like 50 something people that have signed up at the time of recording this, and the more you click on that link and the more people we have signed up on that notifications, then when it goes live, you guys will all know about it and you'll be hearing us talk about it for a month. And this is kind of the start of that month, right after this episode probably. So check that out. Help us support our Kickstarter as it preps to launch April 25th, the punk rock anthology. And you know what? It's a long, crazy time making comics, so you better snuggle up with that cup of coffee you probably got from coffeeandacomic.com, because you get a free bag of coffee and your books bagged and boarded when they're mailed to you, with a couple like little stickers and a bitchin' ass receipt and just all your stuff organized. And Frank's amazing to get in contact with. I didn't know how to use the new pull list system, not gonna lie. That shit threw me off, and I've been busy as hell. So when I glanced at it, I was all lost. And he was like, old man, you just do this and then you old just man. Buy your books. And then I was like, dude, it was so fucking simple. So go set up your pull list with Frank. He's using it through Previews World right now, so that guarantees like what books you're getting. And on Previews World, you just get the variants you want, you put them in your cart, and then Frank orders them. It kind of just sets up the order with Frank over at Coffee and Comic, and then it's just in your pull list at that point. And then you just buy your books. Fucking simple, dude. All you gotta do is just go online and find the books you want and be like, I want this one and this one and this one, and then boom. Done. Fucking done. So hit up coffeeandacomic.com and, you know, get your books bagged and boarded when they come in, you know, save yourself some time. But aside from that, we have a lot of cool things coming out. We're going to be working a lot with the Comics Jam in the next couple months as well. Casey was just on the previous episode and we made this cool little thing going, and I had my first submission go out last week. So we'll be a part of that. We'll be announcing that. We all want you to be part of the Comics Jam, and that's going to be a cool program for you to make comics. So go check out last episode that we did, and it was just fucking the coolest fucking four people interview, and Casey from Bigfoot Knows Karate and Fugitive Press, I'm at Poems. I always want to say Press for some reason, but Fugitive Poems was on there with their Kickstarter wrapping up, and just super insightful. So check that one out. Keep an eye out for the Comics Jam and our participation and us supporting them. And bam, it's crazy how much we have going on right now. But you know what? Who else has something going on right now? A gentleman by the name of Nick Ulansky. I'm always going to fuck up the names whenever I announce people. Like, no matter what. Ulansky. I was so close, and it's so easy. We were just saying how easy it was, but it's a rant. But you know, he runs Starving Author Press, and he has a Kickstarter going on right now. It just launched this week. We're so hyped to talk about it. I just sent him my pledge right before we recorded. Nick, hello. How are you, sir? This shirt's from you, too. So,
I have a Kickstarter for Massacre at the Comic Shop. It's a horror novel that about a local comic shop owner, his friends and regular customers, and a mask toxic fan who's killing them off with a chainsaw. The idea basically came to me. Well, first of all, I wanted to write a horror story. I have written a lot of horror poetry, and I love comics. And I, and it's kind of right about what you know, but I also, I was thinking about how similar anonymous trolls can be to slasher villains, and and when I thought about that, the gears started turning in my brain, and I wanted to basically write a horror story, kind of critiquing toxic fandom and comic book fandom. But amazing. It's also very much a love letter to horror comics and the comic book medium. It's not actually a comic; it is a prose novel. However, it has cover art from comic book artist, Kevin P. West, and a foreword by Chicago comic book writer Tim Seeley, who I've had a lot of good conversations with about kind of the subject matter of the book. And he's That's a amazing. Horror writer. He's done Hack Slash and a lot of stuff for DC as well.
He did the Creepshow book that came out recently too. I was reading that for a little bit. Yeah. Fucking great.
Yeah, he's great. And he's a nice guy. I was really excited that he agreed to write the foreword to the book. The book Massacre at the Comic Shop is kind of meant to be very palpable to someone who's into comics, but also I am trying to kind of reach out to book readers and get them interested in comics.
Nice.
Jennifer Worrell, I'm just going to give a quick shout out to her. I know her from the Chicago Writers Association, and she read her early draft of the book, and she's not a comic book person. And she actually said after reading it, she has a newfound respect for comics.
Ooh.
And, which is a little ironic because the book is also very much a critique of comic book fandom as well. But nonetheless, she still said that because, it is, there's nothing like a horror comic to me. It's kind of a love letter to horror comics in particular, even if it is a prose novel. I have so many references to Hack Slash. Tim Seeley is actually referenced in the book, which is funny because he wrote the foreword. A character quotes Random Acts of Violence, which is a great comic by Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray.
Oh, nice.
Vampirella, Grim Tales of Terror from Xenoscope. There's different references throughout the book and a lot of kind of inside jokes if you're kind of into comics as well.
Man, I haven't heard someone reference Xenoscope ever. Besides right now. So props to you, dude. That's a deep cut in the industry. If you guys know about that publisher, damn, that's super cool. Man, what draws you to like the horror genre so much?
That's a good question. I have a lifelong love of horror. I love the Goosebumps books as a kid, to a certain degree. I'm actually trying to emulate R.L. Stein and it's been Fear Street, really more the Goosebumps. I've written a lot of poems about grief and loss and trauma and failed relationships. And I read this horror comic called Haunting from Phil Falco, and it really inspired me to write my own horror story because horror can really dive into a lot of deep feelings that other genre fiction can't, at least not in the same way. I think there's a catharsis to reading a horror comic or watching a horror movie or reading a horror novel that, we have a lot of fears that we're not always conscious of. And sometimes they really creep into horror media and it makes you less afraid of the world, really. That's what it should do anyway. I don't know if it always does that. There is an argument to be made of how slashers in the 80s, kind of maybe increase stranger danger, even though it was supposed to be a catharsis of that, but that's a whole other thing if you want to talk about that.
I guess to answer your
question though, I love horror because it's catharsis. I think that in the darkest times of my life is when I'm most drawn to horror, but I always love horror. And horror saves my life to a certain degree. So did punk rock, by the way.
Hell yeah, there you go.
Horror and punk rock, those are two things that I think saved my life at certain parts.
Can you embellish on that a little bit more?
Well, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I watched in the early 2000s, and there's that season where she's sleeping with Spike that a lot of people don't like.
Yeah.
But when I watched it, it just like, oh shit, she and the other characters in the show, they feel the same way I do. This is
interesting.
I get it, you know? And as far as like horror in a larger sense. Like, I think that if you're going through different, you're dealing with someone dying, or you're dealing with any kind of trauma, I think horror can really help you manage those thoughts and feelings. It's just watching it or reading it and gets it out there. So, I mean, horror is very therapeutic. In a way that I don't think any other genre fiction is. And also horror comics are great because I love turning the page and seeing that splash page of a bloody murder scene. It's like, holy shit, there's nothing else like that feeling.
You said earlier that you wrote horror poetry, correct?
I did. Yep.
Yeah. So in my experience, I don't think I've ever actually read horror like poetry. Mm-hmm. So if there is a way you could define it, like what would make poetry, like horror essentially? Right. I know you were saying that like when it comes to horror for you, it could be very cathartic. And for a lot of people, when it comes to writing poetry, that's kind of like them like venting or getting cathartic in their own way, right? Or kind of just expressing how they feel in a certain way. So I imagine, the two do kind of combine for you, but overall, how would you define horror poetry?
Well, when I said horror poetry, all I really meant was poems that tell a horror story. Although it can be larger than that too. I have in my first book of poetry, As the Moonlight Shines, I have a poem. Oh man, I actually kind of forgot. I can't think of the title offhand, but nonetheless, there's a whole stanza where I'm talking about just talking about one of the Hammer Horror Dracula movies and how it then relates to the larger feelings I was talking about in the poem about life and death. I mean, that would be a horror poem, but I also had another one called Lycanthropic Endeavor, which is just a werewolf story. And I just wrote it in the form of a poem. I also have in the Kickstarter, a stretch goal is Prince of this. This is a vampire illustration. She does a blood dripping from her lip. And that was drawn for a poem called Garlic Soup for the Soul, which was just contemplating why vampires have stuck around in mythology around the world and in all forms of fiction, for hundreds of years. Those are all kind of horror poems. In my newer book of poetry, American Bug, I have an entire poem where I'm just talking about the comic book Zombie Tramp, which is a great comic. And I actually gave a copy of the book to Dan Mendoza, because I wrote that poem.
Nice.
He was totally cool with me writing a poem about his work straight up.
Dude, he's a nice guy. Zombie Tramp, that's another book that like I have not heard someone name drop before. And I've gotten Dan Mendoza signatures and I've met him at Comic-Con. And I don't know, I might still have a couple copies of Zombie Tramp, in various issues. But yeah, you're hitting some deep cuts with some of them. And these are all like horror publishers because, who's the guy that does... Man, I am spacing it out, but she's gray, a vampire, death, like Lady Death, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The creator. I forget his name too. It starts with a P, or his middle last name starts with a P.
Brian Padilla.
Yeah, Brian Padilla. Yeah.
Brian Padilla.
Yeah, okay, cool. That's who I was going to ask if you know about his works as well, but you fucking do, apparently. What drew you to like these indie, like established comics instead of like more of the deeper cuts? Because I feel like you're name dropping some of those more than any sort of like horror DC. Like, or Marvel, like, creatures, you know?
Or what's, like, the biggest horror series? Probably Lock and Key,
maybe? Yeah, Lock and Key or something, yeah.
Yeah, like, when it comes to, like, AAA multimedia kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
Can't think of anything else, really.
Spawn.
Spawn? Oh, my God. Every time with this guy in Spawn. He's like, superhero Spawn. Horror Spawn. Love story Spawn.
Like, you're covering all the bases right there, you know?
Like, yeah. It's like, goddamn, he's like, it's like Shakespeare. There's a Spawn story of somehow that's already been created.
Yeah, fucking do it.
Yeah.
I'm fucking do it. I'll be the one.
Shakespearean Spawn.
Yeah. When I first started getting really into comic books in around 2013, about 10 years ago. And I on Free Comic Book Day, I read Zombie Tramp, and I just realized, oh shit, I love this. and then my local comic book store had some Xenoscope books, especially Grim Tales of Terror, and I started reading it, and I this went down a rabbit hole after that. I was looking into indie horror comics in general. I back a lot of indie horror comics on Kickstarter. I'm not a big fan of Spawn. I feel like it's kind of a product of the past. Same thing with Bloody Death.
It really is.
What?
It really is. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. I love Spawn aesthetically, purely aesthetically. You know what I mean? I've read a lot of Spawn, but it's the fucking art that draws me in every time.
It's funny. Every time it comes up, it's like, man, when you read those first like 15 issues, you're like, holy shit. Like, brutal, what the fuck, dude, man?
Fucking brutal.
nothing against the writing, but goddamn.
No, the writing is fucking horrendous. It's fucking hell.
Have you seen the action figures though?
Yeah, fucking sick though. You sell me on the Gene Simmons like apparel. You know what I mean? Like, you just give me. He looks like fucking Gene Simmons in there for him. Just like, this is nostalgic and bitchin'. You know what I mean? Like, I fucking
nostalgic
win.
And bitchin'. That should be a T-shirt.
That's fun.
And yeah, and Brian Padolo of Lady Death. I really respect him for how much he's drawn attention to Kickstarter. So yeah. I no hate at all to him, but. I am a bigger fan of Vampirella. I also went down that rabbit hole too when Christopher Priest started writing Vampirella. Dynamite.
That's right. Yeah.
Promoted the hell of it, and that book was fucking amazing. And as soon as I read it, I started going down the rabbit hole of like all these other stuff that, all this other stuff that Dynamite's done, like Red Sonja, and a lot of Vampirella books. And there's a whole universe now of Vampirella books.
Yeah. He's a character that's been around for a while at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, for a good minute. I can't remember exactly when, but I know for a good couple decades.
Dan Abnett is writing Vampirella now, and it's going to be like a noir, like Vampirella story.
Nice.
Yeah.
And like the thing about what that's a good segue to your other question before. Vampirella has been done in so many different ways. There, she's been hot sci-fi, she's been horror, she's been noir, and like she's and the reason why the different publishers that's owned her IP has had a very hands-off approach to her, the way that Marvel and DC never does. Like, she's the daughter of Lilith, but she's from the Bible, but also she's an alien from outer space. Doesn't make any sense. Doesn't have to. It's comics.
I had no idea.
You know, what fascinates me is that, like, these are all comics I've heard of, I've, like, observed, I've watched over the years, I've admired, but I've never really sat down and read, like, a Vampirella story or Lady Death. But, like, I am so aware of their presence and their mark on comics because of, like, Wizard growing up. That's where I first saw all those images was Wizard back when I was a kid. And these comics, the shop I was going to back home in El Paso just didn't have any of these available. And it's so cool that you are like this is a weird sounding way to phrase it, but you're a victim of like the best type of comic book fandom. You know what I mean? Where you discovered comics through, you know, there's always the Marvel, like Green Lantern and the Flash is like what sucked me back, like, and got me into comics. But to hear you say like Vampirella and like stuff like that, like in Dynamite in particular and their imprints and whatnot, dude, that is like the cool kid of comic books. You know what I mean? Like you're reading like it's like the cool kid, like in any 80s movie who's listening to like punk music or like fucking Joy Division and shit. But like, that's you in the comic book world reading Vampirella and things like that. Cause we want to be on that level, but we're just listening to the pop shit over at Marvel and DC, you know? Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's that niche genre, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, horror is not necessarily a niche genre overall, but when it comes to comics and horror specifically, I mean, there's a good amount that's like pretty well known and well appreciated, but especially in a world where like 70% of like sales come from one publisher, right? Like, it's one of those things, like, it's still considered on the niche side of things. And like, a lot of people don't necessarily know about a lot of these series or even characters as big as like Vampirella, for instance, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there, you know, the image kind of, but you don't really know like the legacy or the history behind that type of character.
I think Scott Snyder is one of the only ones that's really put horror in the forefront, and Francisco Francavilla, like in the recent years.
Yeah, for sure. Somehow Archie did that.
I love all of Archie horror, actually.
That's true. Yeah, I feel like Archie really
ramped it up.
Yeah, and people got into it again in that sense. And it's funny you mentioned punk rock and horror, because I think of, was the fucking zombie movie, Night of the Living Dead 2. with all the 80s punks. Like, that was like my like favorite.
Oh, really? I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I haven't seen that either, actually.
Yeah. No, yeah. I think it's like two or three where it's just a bunch of 80s punk and they're, yeah, it's not Evil Dead. Yeah, I think it's Night of the Living Dead too. Yes. And it's like all, they're all, it's amazing. Check it out. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But like, speaking of like all these like different series and characters and writers, I know you said like 2013 was when you like really started getting into comics. Mm-hmm. When it came to like poets and comic book writers up to this point, and even just like series, do you have any major influences or anything that really like influenced not just like the work you wanted to create, but maybe like a certain style you were trying to emulate and create as your own or anything like that?
Well, with poems, I do read poetry, but I am a little bit more or a lot more influenced by music. And I mm-hmm. go online and I read lyrics all the time. And I don't even always just listen to music. I just read lyrics. For poems, I'm very, you know, I'm for poetry, I'm pretty influenced by Twisted and ICP and other horrorcore rappers, but also mm-hmm. punk rock bands like NOFX, Pennywise, Bad Religion, mm-hmm. all of the Blink 182 is well.
Yeah, there it is.
I ironically never got too into horror punk.
Oh wow, no misfits.
Not really. I respect them, but I love horrorcore rap. Mm-hmm. You know, like Isham as well. That's the lesser known one. But as far as writing a novel, I kind of said a lot of things at the beginning of the interview, but I'm very influenced by R.L. Stein. Mm-hmm. It's not a YA or children's book, but the way he writes twists, the way he draws you in. I kind of have to admit that I do, you know, as far as in my day-to-day life, my day job is a journalist for a local newspaper south of Chicago. You haven't heard of it. It's very nice. It's a local newspaper. But writing that kind of work definitely influenced the way I wrote this book, the way I write quotes, the way my day job is kind of to observe people and write about them. So, and that's what I did in both my novels. I didn't even mention Diesel Doctrine is based on my experiences working at truck stops for 3 years and all the different people I knew. Massacre at the Comic Shop is not a traditional sequel, but kind of the way a tie-in comic is, like, it's like that, you know. It's it, you don't have to read both books at all, especially if you're not interested in something that's not horror, but it does tie in and in a way that would be a major spoiler if I did. But your question was influences. Reading nonfiction as well, like Christian Perranti and his books, Lockdown America, Police and Prisons in an Age of Crisis. I've read and reread that book over and over again. His style of writing influenced the way I write fiction as well. Shouts out to R.L. Stein, who is the man, Fear Street books, Christopher Pike as well, all those old YA horror novels from the 90s and 2000s.
Nice. That's a good little selection, too, to like kind of, I can see where some of this can be drawn influence. And I get your humor aspect and like the fun of it that, you know, when I look at Massacre at a Comic Shop, just by the brief overview on the Kickstarter page, just looking at it, it looks like fun. And even the art that you have going on in it, it's gory in a sense, but the color palettes and everything are just, it makes it look like this is going to be an interesting story. Where do you cross the bridge between like a novel and a comic book within this? Like how are you balancing that and in that sense?
Well, I think that this wouldn't work as well as a comic because I want it to be very heavy in narration. Mm-hmm. And I personally don't like comics that have too much narration. Dark Knight Returns did it well, but almost no one other than Frank Miller has.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And there was a lot. It is a very contemplative book where the narrator is thinking about the events of the book. Mm. And I, so for that reason, it kind of, I felt like it had to be a novel. And also, I am trying to draw in book readers to comics, as I mentioned before.
Yeah. A cool thing, because I feel like that's a battle that's so hard to like get through. You know what I mean? Like, I'm an avid book reader and I try to balance comics on top of that, you know? And then there's that teeter totter where I fry out on one for a bit and you could kind of switch to the other, you know what I mean? But there are a lot of people, Brandon doesn't read a lot of books in general. He's a comic book reader, and that's the cool thing about it. It's strict, like that's his genre and that's his thing. But to get him to like read something, and it's just like, well, I mean, exactly what you're doing. I mean, it's just like being able to find the right thing to hand to someone and influence them into the next style of that craft, you know?
It's one of those things, too. If you're like an avid, I don't know why I got tongue-tied, like adamant on reading certain things, like novels, for instance, and like you're that person that's like, you know, I read a lot of books, but I've read like Watchmen, you know?
Yeah.
It's like finding that one book that really hooks people. Can be difficult, and like trying to be that person to bridge the gap, but like, hey, novel readers, come check out my comic. It's like an uphill battle sometimes.
Yeah.
Like for me, I've read, you know, novels for fun throughout my life, obviously. And it's always had to be like that specific book at the right time that kind of hits me. Like the last marathon I did was like the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, books. Like for some reason it's just, I bought them. And then like 10 years later, I was like, all right, I'm gonna go through like all three of these. And I marathoned them. And so it's just one of those things that like, sometimes you gotta like catch lightning in a bottle or whatever it's called, that expression, you know?
No, absolutely. And that's cool that your book is trying to like achieve that. That's a mission. You know what I mean? And I like that kind of mission. Like you're trying to just change the palette of somebody else into like getting into it. Mm-hmm. I'm fucking hyped for it. Cause I just like fucking reading that shit.
Nice.
A big thing also, it comes to covers, like, especially with comics, like covers are like their own market in general. And just like, you know, one cover is like a make or break on like a perfect book you could read, honestly. Like there's probably so many comics out there that have suffered because of horrible cover art or whatever it may be, or really polarizing cover art to what the story actually is.
Oh, that definitely happens.
And what I was curious about is like, when it came to yours, because when looking at your cover, I'm on the Kickstarter page right now. It almost looks like it's kind of like hand drawn. It could have been digital. I'm not too sure, obviously. It was hand drawn. Sure. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So Kevin West drew it. It's
awesome. You could tell from that, from the get-go. Did you feel like when it came to getting this cover ready, you kind of wrestled with certain ideas, or you want to have maybe like a whole massacre in an actual comic shop, or just kind of hint at it with some blood, you know what I mean? Well, just one of those things where you kind of wrestle different ideas and what to settle on.
Right. Well, I mean, major shouts out to Kevin P. West for the cover art, because my initial idea was a little bit more simple. All I said was that I wanted a wall of comic books and some blood splattered across it. When he sat down to draw it, he started bouncing off different ideas with me for the cover, and all of them I said, yeah, that sounds great. And like, he knew the name of the shop was Galaxies Comics and Games, because I talked to him about the book, and he incorporated that into the drawing. I think that he captured the essence of the book very well. It was a little bit of an uphill battle, because all my previous books have covers from Jorge Santiago Jr., who drew Spencer and Locke. He is an art professor, and he was just busy this time around, so I had to get a new designer, a new cover artist. And Kevin P. West did draw, he did illustrate one of my poems, An American Bug, and he's a good guy. I actually have a commission from him on my wall, and I asked him to do the cover, and he did a fantastic job. But the question was, wait, what was the question again?
Like deciding on the final cover, you know?
For the most part, I was in very regular communication every step of the way with the cover artist. But it was mostly his ideas based on what he knew about the book, and he did a very good job. All I actually said from the beginning was, I want a wall of comic books, blood splattered across it. Mm-hmm. And he asked, like, how about a spinning rack in there? I was like, Cool. Yeah.
You got to have there a spinning rack.
Yeah.
Comic shop.
Yeah.
It's funny how monumental that is, like, still.
The spinning rack?
I've never really seen a spinning rack in a shop, like, or at least really? Very often.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
my local shop does.
It's funny. The comic shop that I've been going to for like a decade at this point, he actually bought one used. Like, I guess they're not like a modern thing, unless that was the aesthetic he was going for.
I don't think it's a modern thing, though. Yeah, exactly. I feel like that had to be the case then. Yeah.
Yeah. Spinning rack? At least maybe he got a good deal.
Rack, dude. Like, but that sounds sick as fuck.
Right.
I'm going to eBay a spinning rack right after this fucking episode.
How much for spinning racks? And it's like, you're like, oh, I guess they're just trying to get rid of these. Yeah. There's going to be like a huge boom of like comic shop owners like, wait, we need these.
That's going to be amazing. That's so cool. So, you know, tell me about like the process it was. You've made previous books and everything, poetry books. Like, what do you do your own layouts and designs? And like, do you like format it? Do you work with any editing? Like, tell me about your process when you're doing a book.
Well, I've always had, so my first book, As the Moonlight Shines, mostly was designed myself, and I didn't hire an editor, and that was a mistake. every book since then, all three others I've had editors and had a designer. I work with them, and I'm still the self-published author who ultimately makes the final call. But I have editors and a designer. I have an editor and a designer.
Okay, nice.
With poems, with poetry, it's not as necessary to have an editor, but it's still a very good thing.
When it comes to like, you know, comic book writing, narrative writing, or whatever, a lot of the process, at least for a lot of beginning writers, is they don't realize is part of writing is rewriting. You know, the rewriting process is the part everyone hates. When the editor comes in or whoever you're working with, they just come in and like tear it apart and go, all right, change all this, make this more consistent or whatever it may be. That's the part is like the real like nitty gritty of writing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's why I love self-publishing because, I can basically have someone who I already know has an opinion who I like and respect. Whereas with, I worry about traditional publishing, someone coming in and saying, hey, change this, change that. At the newspaper I work for, I obviously work with editors all the time, and you know, I do like and respect their opinion. So that's something I always worry about with traditional publishing.
Yeah, totally over editing or completely changing the original direction.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, is that where the creation of Starving Authors Press came from? Where? How long has that been around? What got you to come up with the title and just run with this own? Like, and it's basically your own publishing company at this point. Yeah.
Yes. Well, Starving Author was my name on Twitter that I made even before I had a book. It's been so long, I don't actually remember. I couldn't tell, but I know that I was thinking of starving artists, and I said, "Oh, I'm a starving author. I will want to." And I actually wrote a poem in American Bug about the meaning of starving author. It's also kind of saying I'm starved to write. You know, it's not just about material conditions. It's also about this idea where I have to write. You know, I can't imagine a life without writing. So I'm a starving author. But also it's saying that this is not, it's glamorizing the idea of, kind of being a self-published or DIY, the punk rock ethos of doing it yourself. Even if I do someday become a world famous author, I'm still a starving author because I'm starved to write. So.
Hell yeah. There you go. I fucking love that, dude. Yeah.
Nice spin on that.
Yeah, it's cool. It's rare you come across somebody who has like true like definition and purpose behind everything. You kind of seem to have like a theme and like a mission statement behind each project, behind each, you know, statement you put out, behind, you know, just the name itself, Starving Author. Like it's fucking brilliant.
Thank you.
And you know, so you've been around for how long now? How long have you been doing publishing books? And in total, how many do you have out? And are they still available for people to get?
Absolutely. So I have an Etsy store where you can buy any of my three books except for the book that is out yet. which there's the Kickstarter for, Massacre at the Comic Shop. They're all on Amazon and barnesandnoble.com. I would prefer you to support me, but I would also prefer you support Barnes & Noble for Amazon, because I love Barnes & Noble. I don't want them to
disappear. I'm already on your Etsy page. I'm already here. I literally typed it in as I found it. It's literally Starving Author Press right on Etsy.
There you go.
That easy.
We'll drop a link in the description. 5 seconds. Yeah, fuck it. We'll drop a link in the description below for you guys to check it out too.
Your fucking books are hella like the right price too. You can get all your shit for like $30.
Yeah, pretty much.
Look at that. Hell yeah.
I did actually have an earlier edition of As the Moonlight Shines. It was published on Lulu Press, which is not good. Don't ever use Lulu Press.
But, never even heard of it. Gonna forget about it already.
Dude, I think I bought like a music book, like a bass, like notation book off of there at one point, and it just did not come out. Like, I just, the way the pages were printed and spread out, it was just like, I don't know, like 12 bars per page, and you're like, how
like
it's this thick for like 4 songs? Yeah, really, it's fucking insane.
It's like, it's like the Wish version for books. Like,
yeah, it was bad, dude.
Yeah, it's Lulu Press is not good. It's expensive. You can only buy the book directly from Lulu Press, and it's it was bigger before it was bigger before self-publishing was bigger, and before Kickstarter existed, before there were these other ways to self-publish or small print publishing.
Enough people got sick of their shit, and it was just like, I'm fucking figuring this out. Like,
yeah. and I think that I revisited As the Moonlight Shines, and I had a Kickstarter for it, and I did it correctly this way, and that was kind of the launch of Starving Author Press.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
So if I were to purchase and read a book from you right now, would you say As the Moonlight Shines be the book to get?
Not really.
No?
I obviously any of my books.
Yeah.
But As the Moonlight Shines is mostly poetry I wrote more than 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I even say in the preface for the book that it represents a different chapter of my life. I think I just kind of wasn't as good. An American Bug, I'm a better poet. But at the same time, As the Moonlight Shines, if you are someone who this is in Massacre the Comic Shop too, but if you are dealing with grief in some way, you might find catharsis in As the Moonlight Shines, because that's very much what I was writing about. The idea of the As the Moonlight Shines and the title of the book is referring to the idea of, like, even in a starless sky, because of light pollution or whatnot, there's still always the light of the moon. There's always some kind of light, even in the darkness. So if you're going through a tough time, if you lost someone who, my best friend was murdered in the late 2000s, and I wrote a ton of poetry about it, and that's what As the Moonlight Shines is about. And I thought back to those old feelings again when I wrote Massacre at the Comic Shop, because something that bothers me about a lot of horror is I don't think it always takes grief seriously enough. Like, there's always not enough time, and I think that's why when I read the horror comic Haunting by Phil Falkos, and it's all about grief, and I was like, holy shit, I can write this. I've written a bunch of poems about grief and trauma and failed relationships. I can do this too. And I did. I wrote Massacre at the Comic Shop. And obviously, this is my fourth book, so it's not like, you know, and I am a professional writer. I'm a journalist. But
That's so great.
That was kind of that moment where I realized I wanted to write a horror story.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. I love how, especially as a writer, you have to know how to kind of be open and expose yourself and
being vulnerable.
Being vulnerable and kind of tear open thoughts and feelings that you don't want to revisit, but you need to like kind of, it's a therapeutic way about it.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
It's part of healing a lot of the time. And without certain, it's shitty to say, like it's super shitty to say, but without some of these like really bad like events that we go through as humans and people, like sometimes art just wouldn't get made because that's when we're inspired the most. And that's when you need a release. And when you're releasing, that's how fucking great art is made, you know? So just the fact that it's trailed, you know, through all of this and has helped you on like your journey through all of that. I mean, that's remarkable. It's the best, like, I mean, there's worse things to do to cope with, you know what I mean? There's worse ways to go about it than 100%. Like, you know, deal with stuff. And that I really admire that, because you're absolutely right. Especially on that fact on just how horror doesn't really go too much in detail about grief at all. It's all about the killing and like that, but sometimes the grief and the healing is kind of the hardest part of all of it. And that's where you really have to face some scary shit. And that's where you really, that's a fucking psychological thing. You're just fucking battling the whole time. So that's just, you know, I love hearing stories that can help somebody. You know, you're passing on survival information to somebody else on like, you know, how you process stuff, how you dealt with things and all that, like, and just an escape out of it too, because people could look at this and be triggered to find their own ways to like heal and, you know, expel all that type of thoughts and emotions and to help come to peace with all those things. So with that, like being said, like all of these stories that you've written in the past, they're also part of your tiers on your Kickstarter, correct?
Yes, correct. I have, all my books are available as add-ons. I also have a tier for buy both my novels, and I have a tier for all four of the books. I originally had an add-on where the last American Bug hardcover, well, that's already gone. I printed hardcovers for the previous Kickstarter. They're Kickstarter exclusive, and they continue to be Kickstarter exclusive. Ooh. But the last one, I shouldn't even mention that because it's already sold, but it was an add-on.
But that's good to keep out on your future Kickstarters for sure. Like if you can snag a hardcover, fucking snag an exclusive item right there. Hell yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. What's something that is not sold is, and I do want to show you, I have my books right in front of me. That is not for sale.
Yeah, that's mine.
Spoilers, watch out.
The bat cover art is for sale.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's from Kevin P. West. 5x7, easy to frame. If you're looking for some cool horror artwork to show off your house guests.
Nice.
Or scare people in the office. You can do that.
Hell yeah.
That's dope. Right there next to like your calendar or like some random photo. yes.
Yeah.
That's great. What other tiers do you have? What else, like, do you have any stretch goals set up past this? Yeah.
Well, so what? So I have these bookmarks right here. These are promotional. I'm handing them out at C2E2. One of the stretch goals is to have a new bookmark like this, but instead of being about the Kickstarter, it'll say, you know, available on Etsy, Amazon, and Barnes & Noble, and then other books by Nick Milanowski.
Nice. I got yours in the mail, by the way, too. Thank you for that.
Oh yes, yeah. You're welcome. And I also sent out these bookmarks to anyone who had ever purchased something from me on Etsy, which is including you, Brandon.
Just saw that.
Yeah.
For anybody curious, in the background, I purchased his last copy on Etsy of American Bug.
Nice.
So.
Oh, yeah. and I'll have more copies printed for the Kickstarter, but for now that is the last copy.
I snagged it.
Thank you. And another stretch goal is this was an illustration as the Moonlight Shines, kind of a vampire lady, Kristen Palmer. She's a tattoo artist. She drew this.
Nice.
And she's got her signature on there. She'll a stretch goal would be to anyone who backed the book at $25 or more. So anyone who got prints or ordered a second book gets a copy of this print, you know. And and the other stretch goal is a print that will include this back cover art and the Massacre at the Comic Shop logo.
Ooh.
And those are the stretch goals I have.
Nice.
And I've had a very successful beginning of the campaign, this modest Kickstarter, and And I'm hoping to break those stretch goals.
Dude, yeah, you, I mean, at the time of recording this, you launched 2 days ago, I want to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 85% funded?
Yep.
Is that what this is? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
About right.
And yeah, you're kicking ass. Like, dude, you're at, man, this, my page just reloaded. 857 out of 1,000 at the time of recording. And this is going to come out tomorrow. So you should be like a little bit like over that. If you get some overnight sales and whatnot. So this is a very fresh episode for all you guys to check out, for Massacre at the Comic Shop. As we begin to wrap up and everything, I'm very curious. Do you have any future, anything in the future we could keep an eye out for, any projects that you're working on currently, anything that you could reveal or potentially reveal too?
Well, I am thinking about the idea of a sequel or a prequel to Massacre at the Comic Shop.
Cool.
But it's still very much the gears are turning my brain about it, because how do I say this without spoilers? I don't know if this is a spoiler or not. It depends on how spoiler sensitive you are. fast forward 15 seconds if you're one of those really super sensitive spoiler people. But there is more than one killer in this book. And I was thinking about maybe having another book about that.
There you go.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There's always a potential to write a spinoff or a sequel, you know?
Yeah.
Hell yeah, dude. I'm excited. I love hearing how like active you are with your writing. It's hard to come across that with writers who are just pushing themselves and putting out their own work in that sense. Like that's when you're in your sense.
When you're writer, publisher, and editor, like yourself, you know?
Yeah.
It's not easy. One of the questions I wanted to ask was, I asked this as someone who's not really knowledgeable on the horror genre, for being honest. We've probably interviewed maybe two other people or so that were really into horror, as like, at least as comics go. Mm-hmm. And I'm always curious, like, for someone who's trying to create a horror story, regardless if it's a comic book, a novel, poetry, if you had your own definition as to what makes good horror, or as to what a good horror comic looks like, or anything like that, if you could give some sort of advice for someone who's trying to write something that's a horror genre, kind of thing, what would you give?
Well, with horror comics, I think splash pages are important. That moment, or if not a splash page, a large panel, that moment where you turn the page and see that reveal, there's nothing else like it. It can't be replicated in a novel, can't be replicated in a movie. But on horror in general, I think you should think about what subgenre of horror you're writing, because that matters a lot. You know, if you're writing a slasher, you want to think about how grounded you are or how silly you are, and what balance you're going to have. And if you're writing psychological horror, maybe research what you're writing about. You know, because sometimes they drop the ball with that kind of stuff. Both of those things are sometimes there's those horror stories that, wait, is this grounded or is this real? I can't suspend my disbelief properly. That happens with slashers and with psychological horror. Sometimes there's ignorance in the story, and it's like, don't be ignorant. Do your research.
There you go. Yeah. Straight up.
Be
yeah.
smart about it, guys. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. And with monsters, I guess, just think about originality, you know, like what separates your monster from other monsters that have been done before. It doesn't even have to be original, but if it's not going to be original, really think of it as a homage instead of fooling yourself and thinking you did something original, you know, because homages are great too. I'm homaging Scream a little bit in this book. So,
I call it like love letter works, like a love letter to a certain thing or genre or whatever. Like they could really like almost do better than the original source material.
Nice.
Like given like the proper research and like honoring kind of the original material in its own way.
Yeah.
That's great. Honestly, that's probably like the best horror advice I've ever heard from somebody.
Yeah.
Because really like, I mean, like I actually really love horror comics. Like I'm a big Bernie Wrightson fan and shit like that. Like, And I've really gotten into horror comics a little bit more over the years because horror was like a hard genre for me to break into. One, because I just didn't want to be fucking scared. Two,
and I know, right? I'm like, I get scared so easily. I'm one of those people. It's like, I definitely do not watch scary movies by myself. I fully admit that.
Yeah. Like certain shit that. I just can't do, like, you know, alone and whatnot. But like, I love shit like Constantine, and like, I love Hellblazer, and I love the horror stuff and like Swamp Thing, and I love, fucking like Midsommar is the type of horror I love, like, or that like Lovecraftian like horror, that horror of the unknown is what I really get into. Even like Something Is Killing the Children, like that was a cool book for, you know, the attempt it has in that monster-esque horror, you know. But and also having that unknown, which is like one of my favorite books from Scott Snyder's that we covered on the show, shit like that really draws me in. But it's finding your flavor of horror. Yeah. Like it's not just like comedy. You fucking have a comedy and it's a fucking comedy probably. Like the only thing that's really going to distinguish it is if it's like a buddy cop or like a fucking rom-com in that sense. You know what I mean? Like, and horror is just so much more specific on where you got to fucking land. To really,
I like,
define.
I think buddy cop when it comes to comedies. It's just like, man, I love Lethal Weapon 1, 2, 3.
I can't think
so
of any
much.
Other like it's like that or like satire, like yeah. Airplane or like Monty Python. Yeah, I don't know why buddy cop is the first thing. I tried to break up comedy in my head, and I was like, I don't fucking know. Like,
yeah, that's a whole different ballgame of like just subgenres.
Yeah, it's when it comes, but like horror, like really, you could not like horror, but still really like horror. You can't really say that about any other genre, you know? Like, you can't just like not like comedy, but like really like some comedies. It's like horror is like, you have to have like it's a wine, kind of fucking just got to swish it around, do a couple tastes, and
it really
like,
is.
Fuck that one, I'm gonna drink this one, you know?
Or yeah,
like, yeah, like
the people that love slasher horror films versus like sci-fi horror films.
Yeah, like I don't like slasher film. I'm not gonna lie. Like I've only watched slasher films because of my roommate now. But there's some stuff like Evil Dead I think is cool as shit, you know? Like,
oh, yeah.
Even the remake, I thought that was gory as fuck, and I love that one. But I also love the original, which is funny and fucking wacky, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I just can't get into some stuff.
Speaking of movies real quick, just can you, like, do you have any favorite? I'm assuming you do. But, like, do you have any favorite ones that come to mind? If you're like, man, we're going to sit down and watch, like, the best fucking horror movie marathon ever. Yeah. What would be like the three movies you could think of?
So, well, in psychological horror, The Babadook, that does.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
Also, Sinister, one of the scariest movies ever made. That's kind of monster. That's kind of monster / psychological. The original Frankenstein, the original Dracula, and those really get into kind of honestly. Really the social commentary of horror. It's ironic because it's kind of the first ones. And speaking of that, also Diary of the Dead is, in my opinion, the best zombie movie ever made. Very few people have actually seen it. It is George A. Romero, and it's all about social media. It's a found footage film.
I've actually heard about that one. I watched like a random video essay about like the history of zombie movies.
Nice. I haven't heard of that one. I'm curious about it. Zombies are one thing that do fucking scare me, actually. I'm not going to lie.
The idea of things like eating you, you know?
Yeah, just fucking
freaky.
I'd be fucked. Yeah. Like, I would not survive a zombie invasion. That's just another thing. I just know I'd die. You know what I mean?
You'd die in like a fucking heart. Like, if I was on that original ship in the first Alien movie, I'd die so fucking fast.
Yeah, fucking so. That's another reason why I can't cope with horror sometimes. It's like, I'm fucked. And then it's like, I have to try to save my animals. We're all fucked. Like, we're all fucking. Yeah. Anyways, my bad. Go on. Yeah. If you want to list a few more.
Well, I really just had one more I was going to mention, which is in the slasher genre, the original Scream. Great movie.
That's what my roommate says. Eric always fucking tells me. He's like, dude, I know you're not into slashers, but we've got to watch Scream. In fact, he's watching it like tonight with a friend and whatnot. He's out of the country, but like they were saying they're going to watch Scream tonight. And I was like, fuck, dude, like, that's crazy. Like, he's really into Scream and says that that one's the best one out of everything. So I will take both of your opinions and I will.
Dude, right. Scream is one of those franchises. They got to number 6 and people are still going crazy for it. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I've only seen the first one. That's literally it.
The same way people get intimidated by comics being like, there's so fucking many, is my excuse for being like, that's why I never saw Friday the 13th or any of those. Because I was like, there's so many. Nightmare on Elm Street and shit. Like, yeah, fucking, now am I going to start?
Also, I don't know if you feel like this as like a horror appreciator, but like I feel like a lot of time it's also kind of hard to marathon horror sometimes because it can be a lot to take in, like especially yeah. talking about like psychological or like
I don't know
these crazy slasher or monster ones.
When I do watch horror, I binge it, to be honest. Like I go on a kick and like especially during October, I always fucking binge. Like I went through zombies one year, I went through vampires another year. Like I'm always trying to blast through something in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel that. Yeah. It can be hard. You really got to contemplate for.
One a day.
We did try to binge like all three Conjuring movies like at once, and at the end of that I was pretty worn out. You're kind of right about that. It's like going on too many roller coasters. We're like, dude, I'm fucking worn out. Like I know we just sat there, but like I kicked my ass.
Yeah, I think the last movie I saw that like really grabbed my attention that was kind of back and forth with people was It Follows.
Oh, yeah, dude, that movie's dope. That sex disease one? That's fucking
dude, that shit's crazy. Like,
yes. That was one
they kind of messed with me for a bit.
Dude, like, yeah. Honestly, I saw that years ago, like at a dollar movie theater home.
And that's a good example of horror being an allegory for something, which is what I'm doing in Massacre at the Comic Shop. It's the massacre is representing, you know, toxic fandom and a certain kind of a fan that turns people off the comics.
It's like a critique, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know you're a good writer.
Social observation.
I know you're good. That was awesome. Yeah. I know you're a good writer because like you just circled that shit right back to you. And it's like, that's why fucking Massacre at the Comic Book Shop. Check it out on Kickstarter, guys. And Nick, this has been a fucking wonderful conversation. I'm so glad we got to have you on the show. I wear this shirt so fucking much. You always see me post on it. I'm always wearing it when I make posts and shit. And I try to wear it on the show all the time. So if you ever make another run, let me know because I need a large. I don't know why I ordered it. But I appreciate everything you do and keep kicking ass and support stuff. It's actually your Kickstarter tiers are like, and I mean this in the most positive way possible, but like they're really cheap. Like
User-friendly.
Yeah, very user-friendly.
Consumer, user-friendly, whatever. Like they're consumer-friendly. Like I was looking at it because I'm backing the $45 one.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And you get a lot of shit in there. Like you were saying earlier, you know, you get your old previous books. I went on Etsy to get like the last one because I'm actually going to give it as a gift to someone. So you caught me in the act. But for pledging, it's just like 45 bucks for four books. Right. It's like a little over like 11 bucks plus shipping and tax. Like that's fucking kick ass to do for like readers. Because we all know like no one talks about the actual horror of buying books of how expensive they are.
That's the real horrific crime right there.
Yeah, $26.99.
Well, Nick, dude, thank you so much. Where can we find you on social media or any of your links? Besides, you'll find them down here below, most likely. But give it a shout out.
Well, on Twitter, I'm at Starving Author. That's one word. On Instagram, I'm at Cynical_But_Fun. So that's Cynical But Fun. I mean, you can add me on Facebook, Nicholas Yulinowski. And I have a Facebook page for Starving Author Press, too, but I don't really post on it unless I have a Kickstarter going.
There you go. Same. We have a Facebook page. We don't fucking use it. Like, it's just, it exists because you have to claim that domain, you know what I mean? But it's been a pleasure, and thanks for hanging.
Hey, have a great night,
Brandon. Thanks for being on.